Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 498. Science Faction, are we still evolving?
In a cool sci-fi way? No, unfortunately.
I mean, I guess, depending on what you mean by a cool sci-fi way, I mean, like...
I have yet to see a fucking X-Men. I have yet to see a Total Recall third boob. I have yet to see a lot of things that I would... And by the way, the bar is super low. It's eyesight that's 10-20 or 20-10, whichever's better.
Or knowledge of eyesight. Yeah. Like, could I evolve knowledge of what
that
eyesight
is cool.
means?
Yes.
Now, David, I've never thought about this before. You just kind of linked two things in my head. I have my entire life been just completely fascinated with the evolutionary process, specifically human evolution, and also with Marvel's X-Men. And I'm wondering if, like, the evolution connection is there. Like, in my mind, I was like, oh, I'm so interested in evolution because I would love to shoot laser beams out of my eyes, and I just need to figure out how to make this work.
I mean, that's literally the only reason I have ever done two things is learn a Cajun accent because of Gambit and wanted to learn science, specifically the science that deals with evolutionary biology. And Charles Xavier would not accept me into his school for either his school of gumbo cooking or...
is Charles Xavier's school of gumbo cooking?
He's allowed to have. It was a side project that's done very well.
Okay. I wonder if Gambit was pissed or happy about
that. I am tired of poor Cajun food in upstate New York. I will start my own academy.
And speaking of the Professor Xavier of Cajun food, I, of course, am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy. With me, as always, is my comedian, Mr. Damian Mercado. Damian, how are you doing this afternoon?
I am doing great. I actually failed out of my first year, partied way too hard at Charles Xavier's Gumbo Academy.
Yeah. When you party too hard at, like, a New Orleans-themed Gumbo Academy, is that when you, like, stay home and do math instead of getting drunk?
I just stayed home and made jambalaya. I just wasn't committed to the program.
Red beans and rice again? Mr. Mercado, are you committed to this program?
Oh, dear. Special thanks goes out to some of our fans. We got some sweet swag in. It's always cool because we're like the laziest podcast on earth. Damien has seen some of the back end of this, and I've told you guys a little bit of it, but like... Apparently, screen printing shops are like the number one business to go under during the pandemic because we are on not our first, not our second, but our third screen printing shop since the COVID thing started. And we've been trying to get our Patreon going. And literally two shops have taken orders from us and closed within 2 weeks, which makes me feel that either the pandemic is really bad on screen printing shops or we are like that one guy who keeps turning women gay.
Thanks, Bobby. I told you that in secret. You know what, fans? Well, you can sit here and believe what he said. Don't get me wrong. It is certainly possible that one screen...
I literally have order forms.
I'm sure there are emails that say how about me and I call BS. I'm sure those exist as well, Bobby.
Yes.
I'm sure.
I am too.
Yeah, let's see your tax returns. How come you've said it's been years? Okay. Let's see your tax returns, Bobby.
I paid almost $700 last year.
This podcast has been such a massive failure.
But most people, like the most podcasts, they produce a bunch of merch and then sell it to their fans. Meanwhile, we're such slackers. We haven't been able to pull that off. But our fans keep producing merch and sending it to us. Damien, you got a shipment recently and we just got a whole bunch of sweet ass shirts in. Not shirts, by the way, like, hey, look, I saw this at Hot Topic and thought you guys might like it. Like somebody made shirts. They had to do graphics and they literally made shirts that went along with the jokes that were going on the show, which when you get just like A, warms your heart, and then B, you're like, man, not since the weekly outpouring of emails about Damien's I Call BS performance has there been this much audience love.
Yeah, you can
around.
Find them. They're in the same file on Bobby's computer as the invoices for the screen printing companies. So they're right there. So all I have to do is break into your computer and find that file. One of the shirts, there were a lot of shirts in it, and a lot of podcasts are used to getting swag, so and they don't brag about it on air, but you know what? We have low self-esteem, and we're going to take this a minute to inflate it. One of them was a shirt from an episode. It had a custom drawing of super scientist Dr. Desk Bongington, which was a character I made up on the fly during I Call BS. just to feign some legitimacy and try to stop the beating for one day. I was like a child lying to his parents about something just to not get punished.
Which we immediately forgot like 2 weeks later, and then got this shirt. And I was like, fuck, that was a great joke. Why did we forget about that?
It's very humbling to know that when we make a joke on this show, somebody out there might laugh uncontrollably and be inspired to make a shirt and send it to us. And you know what? Statistically, with 7 billion people on the planet, it was bound to happen by one person. But you know what? It's still good when it happens. And thank you so very much. Bobby and I are humbled.
Yeah, yeah. It's always awesome to get that kind of stuff. And the emails and the comments and stuff.
I get to walk up to my fiance and say, I'm not a loser. Guess what?
But to be fair, I do call up right afterwards and just yell, yes, you are.
Why do I have you on speakerphone all the time?
It's not speaker. I'm just very loud.
I have you like one of those old T-Mobiles that was like a walkie-talkie. Boop, boop.
Yeah, it's really cool. And by the way, weird uptick. I just see these weird swings in numbers, and we are not in any way advertising at all. And I'll see these little upticks in numbers. So I know somebody's telling something about it because people are listening. So we appreciate all you guys. Thank you guys for sharing it with people. As we mount up to our Patreon, it is awesome to see that happen. And speaking of which, we have our upcoming episode next week, Damien. We have the Big 500.
I hope we have something planned for this. I hope, it'd be really cool if some fun characters from the past showed up.
We are going to have some fun things planned. We're going to bring back some old bits that I bet you, for most of our modern day listeners, like if you've only listened in the last 5 years or something, there are some bits that we used to do that you've probably never heard of before. So we're going to try and rehash some of those old stuff and see what you guys think about it. Bring in some new stuff. Now, there is a catch to this, which is if you remember a while ago, we had a hard drive error that knocked out 2 episodes. So technically, our 500th episode was supposed to be today, like right now. This was supposed to be our 500th. And then the way it would have worked is we would have just had our 500th as the Corona update, which if we kept going right now, which wouldn't work, both because of that and because we need to get ready for that 500th episode. It's going to be a big deal. We are actually taking the I Call BS off this week. So there will be no I Call BS posted this week.
Unfortunately, Bobby, will you come over and flog me in private?
Are you happy because you hadn't prepared any Happy Days references specifically to use this week or what?
I'm going to be shark jumping so hard this week. Oh, man. This show has already done it, but I will be personally doing it in my life, which is saying a lot because I have not accomplished much.
So we will be taking off I Call BS this week. That'll help us plan, and it'll just kind of sync our numbers up. So we are back to 500 for the main show of next week. We're going to bring back some old bits. We're going to maybe even play some of our best of. And in the interim, now I know this isn't a long time, but if you guys have a favorite bit or a favorite episode or a favorite something, please feel free to send it to us because we will include that in the usual this is what we're looking at. Expect a big old long episode for 500, and that'll kind of make up for the fact that we don't have an I Call BS this week. But that is what's going on with us. And after that 500 is kind of when we're hopefully, it looks like, going to be really releasing the info for our Patreon and all that stuff. So super excited. Really, really neat. I can't believe it's been 500 episodes, man. Like it's crazy. And we first started.
I was like, this podcast will get divorced within a year. This is just a podcast marriage of convenience.
Yeah. Even other podcasts at our podcast wedding were just licking their lips, waiting for each one of us to be single so they could try and.
Yeah. I mean, I was thinking about making a podcast with an ex-comedian friend of mine just during the wedding. Like during the reception, yeah. We'd sneak off and just record our takes on movies.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I got to admit, sometimes when we're consummating our podcast, I am imagining other comedians.
That's fair. That's fair.
What if it was Bill Burr?
And I'm imagining being happy.
You're such a fucking nag. But anyway, yes, we will be doing our big 500th episode next week. So we're super excited for all you guys. I think there's a few people because the IP addresses show up and it'll say like, oh, you know, this person kind of shows you on your feed whether or not they're new listeners or not. And it only show you up to a certain point. Like it'll show you back so many years. But there are some people who I think have legitimately been listening to us since the beginning. If you are one of those people, send us a message in the upcoming week or so and let us know because that is pretty cool.
It's probably one of the fake accounts I've been making throughout the years, actually. That's...
Yeah. One of the few people who ask us to stop I Call BS.
Please. I am Dr. Scientist Desk Bongington, and
I mean, not Desk Bongington.
Nice save. Why am I typing this?
All right, let's move right on to science articles.
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
Article number 1, are we still evolving?
Again, I've given you my answer. Yes, but not in a cool way.
I mean, there still could be cool ways to evolve just because you're not getting mutant superpowers.
Yeah, there are cool ways to evolve. And if they affect my descendants, that's super cool for them. Hey, if my great-great-great-grandson's Wolverine, that is legitimately pretty cool. But the selfish part of me, that's like saying, like, I'm dying of Alzheimer's and somebody walks in and goes, hey, good news, we'll have a cure in 5 years.
What I'm pointing out to you, Damien, is that the mutant powers don't have to be the only end, whether it's you or your grandson. You could evolve in other ways.
I could get a gun like the Punisher. You're right.
Yes.
Because men with guns have superpowers and that they can take life really well compared to people without guns.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it just depends what kind of car you're in. Regardless, because there are like a lot of different ways that you can look at what evolution can be affecting. You know, evolution is a change of gene frequency over time. And we all know that not only did evolution obviously create the human beings that we are today in terms of bipedal walking apes with a ridiculously giant brain and all these social skills and all that stuff, all that, yeah, our giant ass dongs, all that stuff is part of the evolutionary process, right? But also, there are side branches that groups took. You know, we've talked before about the Southeast Asian islanders who evolved a different type of spleen so that, or at least a spleen that could hold more oxygen, more oxygenated blood in it, so that they can go free diving for like 5 or 6 minutes at a time quite regularly, whereas most of us would drown, you know?
What about sometimes evolution happens and it doesn't actually give you a superpower? In fact, one of your greatest weaknesses, your white skin.
Yes, that's true.
As you have been weakened. You used to be able to combat the sun all day. Now you can only do it 15 minutes at a time while slathered in lotion.
Yeah, I work outside all day, and if my sun touches skin, I'm basically a vampire that has to work outside all day, and I'm just covered from head to toe in cloth so I don't die. But yeah, no, you're right. Like, that was an adaptation to northern climates, you know, lower melanin in the skin, the ability to pull vitamin D out from lower amounts of sunlight. But then all of a sudden, you get some guy like me who suddenly decides they want to live in Southern California, and it's not so great for skin cancer and all that kind of, and sunburns and all that kind of stuff.
Please, come to Siberia, Bobby. We have lots of Native Americans here in Siberia to study.
You know, and those evolutionary pressures do interesting things. They push groups in certain directions. Like, one of the most interesting things that was ever pointed out to me is over and over again, hunter-gatherer groups in general will test higher in IQ for those IQ tests that are cross-cultural that can be applied to them than your average decently educated Western person. And you might look at that and go, what the fuck? How is that possible? We have education systems, we have school systems, we have books, we have learning. How is it that these hunter-gatherers, some of which are quite literally illiterate, are constantly testing substantially higher IQs than the rest of us? And the reality is, in hunter-gatherer cultures, intelligence is selected for on a very regular basis. And so if you're a dumb hunter-gatherer, you're usually not successful, and you're usually not the person who contributes the most genes to the next generation, whereas the guy who figures out the best way to improve that bow and arrow by 10% or make a better mousetrap, so to speak, will be the one who ends up having more kids and spreading their genes. And like, literally, in a lot of those cultures, like, this is a sad way to say it, but particularly dumb people tend to die.
Yeah, the Walking Dead universe does not suffer a fool.
Yeah. And so, like, if you look at some of the stuff, some of the research we have in terms of tribal peoples of South America or New Guinea, a lot of times we look at it, we're like, fuck, man, if we could just get these guys into Oxford, we'd be killing it. Because all these guys have just naturally, their intelligence is just naturally higher. And it's a very heritable thing. Your intelligence essentially is mostly heritable. And you can influence that by researching stuff to make yourself more informed. And then maybe some of that information, the ability to link it, will help increase some kind of intelligence. But in general, your horsepower is kind of limited by the brain, the engine that you are born with. So a lot of that is very heritable. Now, compare that to people of European or Eurasian descent. People in general of Eurasian societies for the past 2,000 years, what do you think they've been generally selected for in terms of evolution?
Disease resistance.
Exactly. That's 100% correct.
I listened to the show. Why would you ask me that? That's thanks for mansplaining it to me, Bobby.
That's true. I was host-splaining. That's 100% true. Like, while the hunter-gatherers have had to have a constant selection pressure on them that pushes their genetics towards higher intelligence, higher natural intelligence, broad Eurasian groups, specifically those in urban environments, have been pushed not necessarily towards intelligence, but towards, you know, the resistance of certain pandemic spreads. Like, that's crazy when you think about it. And that is evolution in action. There's a reason that somebody you pull a baby out of Paris and a baby out of...
And the French government loses it. I am telling you, every time.
Yeah, but it's also a French baby, so she's probably already dressed kind of slutty.
And smoking a cigarette.
And explaining existentialism.
Oui. Does not matter where I grew up, because life is what it is.
If you grab a French baby out of the middle of Paris and a baby out of the middle of the New Guinea Highlands and raise them in the same place, chances are that baby from the New Guinea Highlands will do better in cognitive tasks, and chances are that baby from France will do better if a infectious disease sweeps through them.
And that baby from New Zealand will also have a high probability of being left-handed, which would be an advantage in combat versus the French baby.
Are you saying that because they drive on the wrong side of the road? What's the?
Oh, no, there's no joke. It's a fact we've talked about in the show that I believe that people that up to 50% of the New Zealand Highland population is left-handed as opposed to every.
Are you saying New Guinea?
I thought it was New. Oh, sorry. New Guinea. Sorry. Not New Zealand. Superfan Dwayne. Also, check on that last one.
You couldn't get further apart from two places. Like, one of them is one of the oldest human occupations outside of Africa, and the other one didn't see human beings until like 750 years ago.
Oh, is it a human in New Zealand? Wow.
So evolutionary pressures are still obviously pushed on us. And it's still, you know, when we think of the change of gene frequency over time, it doesn't always have to be something that is pushed because of natural selection, right? It doesn't have to be that you survived a pandemic. Sometimes it's sexual selection. We talked about that with the possibility of human dongs, right? Why are our penises so much bigger than the other great apes? Well, one of the theories is, as we stood upright, they were essentially on display. We were hanging dong around the fire and, you know, women got to pick the one they liked the most, and it's selected for larger and larger penises.
I believe you coined the term a slinging banana.
Yeah, that was another one.
Listen, the eggplant had not been cultivated at this point. The MOG would have been lost on the culture. The plantain.
We are indeed still subject to evolution in that sense, in the terms of gene frequency over time. We're not usually, in Western society, subject to the same selection pressures like natural selection. But it's still going on. We still have that gene frequency change. Now, what's interesting about an article that just came out this week is it looked at whether or not our physiology is actually evolving over what is actually a rather short amount of time. What they wanted to look at was the median artery, which is basically an artery in the middle of your wrist. And your hand is already supplied by blood, by other arteries. So this is not something you need to survive. In fact, we think it's a vestigial appendage from back when our ancestors needed more blood to their hands because they were doing things like swinging through the trees, where your hands are above your head and you need to be able to have a lot of strength to grasp branches and hold your body weight and stuff. So we needed more blood to our hands. We had an extra artery that delivered that blood. Eventually, we didn't need it anymore, and it slowly went away. Now, nowadays, in adult populations, most people don't have it. Everybody's born with it, but usually it kind of atrophies and goes away in infancy. But some people do keep it into adulthood.
If you rely on your hands to escape and you're a primate, an early primate, yes, that needed that median artery, and you fell asleep and you fell asleep the wrong way and your hand falls asleep, as it does in all of our, yep, primates, you would need that extra artery as a survival mechanism if, I don't know, a jaguar wakes you up in the, yep, middle of the night. You got to get out of there.
Yep. I'm going to go ahead and say a jaguar is already going to be able to climb up that same tree, so you might be fucked no matter what.
Then you beat him to death in the tree, and you can't do that with a numb hand.
Yeah, I mean, look, the idea would be that we no longer really need it. Some people, it hasn't gone away all the way because it's not necessarily detrimental, but for the most part, it's just not selected for, and so it's gone away. Well, researchers started looking at its prevalence in current populations versus past populations. And by past populations, I don't mean ancient human beings. I don't mean humans 10,000 years ago. They were literally looking 100 years in the past. Now, a few disclaimers. This study is done exclusively in Australian men. And as we've talked about numerous times before, anytime you take a subset of the whole population, you can't necessarily extrapolate to everybody else. We don't know what this means for women. We don't know what this means for other people, other ethnic groups, national groups, genetic groups. You know, Australia being an island and all that kind of stuff tends to have some genetic isolation there. And also, we've talked before about the whole issue about, in Australia, constant distinctions between what is or is not a knife and how that might affect the evolutionary process of the median artery.
Well played. That was a well-delivered joke, Bobby. Just
thank you.
Just it was masked as science, and somebody had to really be paying attention to the test. They had to be reading the questions in order to pick that one up. By the way, 100 years ago, Australia, how long had they been a community of purely ex-cons?
I think the mid-19th century is when they started shipping people over there for convict stuff.
So a lot of these people were probably served in a British prison at some point.
Maybe. This is about 70 years after that, or at least after the main part of that. So, they're probably still...
What a sweet deal. Hey, get out of jail and go to a country with some sun.
Yeah. Well, if you think that, I highly advise... there's a great story about a shipwreck on a small atoll off of Australia that is probably one of the darkest chapters in all of human history. The name escapes me of it right now, but I think they're like a Dutch ship or they're going to a Dutch colony or something. They end up crashing a ship, and it just shows you, like, one, clearly one of the guys was a sociopath, and unfortunately he had a leadership position, but it just shows you how dark humanity can get, because it turned dark really fast and real dark.
I listened to the Case File episode about that, and it was basically describing what would happen if The Walking Dead happened, but there were no zombies, just the horrible, needless human-on-human atrocities that are just committed and justified.
Yes, and just, it is everything. It's everything you could possibly think.
Where people are just like sheep, just like waiting to be picked off. Ugh.
It didn't take that long either. It wasn't like, within years. It was like, no, within like 8 days, people were being raped and murdered en masse. So I don't know. There was some dark stuff going on. And I don't know if I'd call that the salad days of ancient Australia.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe a little bit after that. Maybe a few years after that.
Fair enough. Then it's all just dingoes and boomerangs and good times.
Killing Tasmanian wolves.
So the idea is that they wanted to see whether or not the prevalence of this median artery differed in past times. And this was because this would have been described in medical textbooks as kind of an oddity before. Like, hey, you're not going to really see this that often, but every once in a while you run across one of these weirdos, it's probably a witch. It's old medical textbook just quoting it, you know? And so researchers now are looking and they're like, you know, I mean, it's not super common, but it seems more common than that. I wonder what's going on. And they started going back and looking at basically the records and preserved bodies and stuff like that of individuals who were around 100 years ago and what that looked like. And what they found is, at least from their sample sizes, and again, all caveats to those being localized, small sample sizes of specific individuals, it seems like the prevalence of the median artery is now 3 times greater in modern populations. Not a little bit, not 10%, which would still be a significant number. 3 times. That's a huge difference. And that indicates there almost certainly is something going on, if that data is correct.
Nature abhors a vacuum, one. That's rule one. Two, nature hates unoxygenated hands. And so, it's going to select the way to give you the highest O2, blood O2 level.
Yeah, maybe there was just some stud with just like ripped ass hands running around Sydney 100 years ago, putting it to all the dames, right? Like maybe that's where this came from, because it is an isolated population.
Maybe he had an advantage in darts or something. And this dude was like the Wilt Chamberlain of the darts world and just went around Australia cleaning up.
He just won every kangaroo thumb wrestling match ever and became like the king of Australia.
The king of Australia.
That's how that works, right?
You heard it on a science podcast, people.
It might have to do with boomerang catching. We don't know.
Back then, you could get by a kangaroo for 4 dongaros.
Good. Remember we did that bit where we used to just mock countries and everything?
Yes. Oh, yeah. That was
like whatever we did was a bit where I would roast a nation or city or American city or state.
It was ironically, it was wherever we had seen the biggest uptake in listeners, we would roast that area.
I think we lost more listeners than anything. Oh, man, I don't want to get roasted. Let Lithuania take that bullet.
If we lost a bunch of Aussie listeners over that, screw them. They can go home and masturbate with their well-vasculated hands. I don't give a shit.
If so much more sensation.
So, what are the possibilities? One is there is a selection pressure. Maybe in the modern day society, having that more blood to your hands is useful for doing manual labor, doing specific tasks that involve, who knows, computers. I don't know if they've been around long enough.
Boomerangs.
Yeah, boomerangs, doing any kind of mechanical thing. Maybe it's just more useful. Maybe, like we talked about with shovel-shaped incisors in Native American populations vis-a-vis vitamin D acquisition in Beringia, maybe it has nothing to do with the hands. Maybe the same mutation that causes you to keep the median artery into adulthood also helps with something else in Australia, like, I don't know, not getting skin cancer. I don't know, maybe there's another thing that goes along with that particular mutation that makes you more likely or less likely to have something else that is evolutionary pressure.
A desire for Vegemite.
Maybe it's what we talked about in terms of like the founder effect, where it turns out that a group of dudes made it to Australia 120 years ago, and they all happen to, just by chance of where they're coming from, have the median artery, and then that just kind of, because of luck and chance, made its way through.
The people who were set were usually the pickpockets, and those of us who were the fastest of hand were the ones who were sent to Australia, mate.
Maybe it was something you needed. Yeah, it's something you needed to do while you were there. Like, if you couldn't rub off a kangaroo within like 30 seconds, you were dead in any given time when you were out in the bush. So this became very useful.
Well, until you domesticate him, then it's every day. But yeah, like a wild roo. Yeah, it's just every 30 minutes.
That's why you always see those videos of like a kangaroo punching a paraglider landing in Australia. They're all just real sexually frustrated.
It forced us to learn to cook. Boiled roo tastes terrible.
Maybe this is genetic drift, which we've talked about before and is very much misinterpreted by the broad population. Genetic drift, arguably more so than natural selection, is a guider of evolution. And that's basically, you could almost think of it as the chance of, almost just chance, statistical chance, of certain genes making their way through the population. So they don't have to be selected for or selected against, just based on the odds and ends of miscombination and recombination and meiosis and mitosis and all that stuff, we end up with this amount of genes for this reason, and it really has no selection whatsoever. Maybe it's sexual selection. Who knows? Who knows? But the answer is, does this mean we are evolving if we see higher prevalence of these median arteries? And the answer is maybe, but not necessarily. Because I just gave you a bunch of examples that could have been examples of evolution. Sexual selection, natural selection, genetic drift, all of that stuff. Those all could have been evolutionary mechanisms by which this happened. But you know what else could be? Phenotypic alterations. Meaning, maybe being in a modern day society, there's some aspect of what we do, we use our hands more dexterously, and therefore the artery tends not to atrophy because we use our hands and we use it so much that it doesn't naturally atrophy the way it did in the 1800s.
Playing video
now,
games.
That might be a hard case to make because, again, it usually atrophies in infancy. But like maybe nowadays we do a lot more of like, hey, baby, hold my finger, and a lot less of like, hey, hit that baby, he's crying.
I was thinking maybe just child labor, early child labor to develop those hands. They're not sewing fast enough. How is Australian textile supposed, how is the sheep's, these Ugg boots supposed to reach the market with these lazy babies?
I know Australia does like have a big textile industry or whatever, or at least a big wool industry based on their sheep and stuff. But when you say Australian textiles, I just imagine like 20 snakes sewed together.
An inspector comes into the factory. Hey, wait a second. There's a gator mixed in with his snake. What are you trying to pull here?
They wrap it all up in just like the most poisonous spider's web they can find. And like, that's an Australian blanket.
They're a hardy people.
So it could be a phenotypic thing where all of a sudden we are doing something in our environment. It could also be an environmental contamination thing. What if the process by which we naturally atrophy that median artery has to do with the normal way that human beings tend to develop, or the majority of human beings tend to develop, but then in the presence of BPAs or something, I'm just going to use some scary buzzword, in the presence of some environmental contamination, you don't lose it. And so this is actually a sign that we are being more and more exposed to X chemical or X particular element. So these are all options. It doesn't necessarily have to mean we are evolving, because for it to be evolution, it has to be genetic based. If it is just us and we all have the same genetic potential to have this, but certain babies end up having it and then growing into adulthood having it because of environmental contamination or because they're doing, you know, like baby wrist curls or something, that is not evolution. That is just phenotypic influence on regular genetics. And that would mean that that is not a sign of evolution. So very interesting. This is actually a Live Science article. You can go out and check it out. However, when you read it, you'll see that they seem to drive right towards the idea that this is certainly an evolutionary adaptation. And it might well not be. So one of the things I always like to do with this show is point out kind of the flaws in a lot of science journalism and science writing. And especially when it comes to evolution, there are very few science writers who understand evolution very well. And this is a great example of kind of missing a huge black hole. Now, it could still be evolution, and it could mean that we are seeing that genetic change, but it doesn't necessarily have to be. So I want you to start seeing this so that every time you see an article about evolution, you should automatically be suspicious if it's any kind of popular news media, because I don't know that I've seen too many science writers that aren't scientists themselves that really understand it.
You would be a real Jeff Goldblum, Dr. Ian Malcolm in the science editing newsroom. Like, do you have a problem with my article? Yes, life finds a way.
Oh, I thought you meant just because I always hang out with my shirt unbuttoned down to like the fourth button.
You're oozing sexuality aside. That's implied.
Yeah, of course. And that kind of leads to a funny question, which is how would we expect humans to evolve into the future? Damien, if you had to guess kind of an evolutionary path for human beings, what would you think that would be?
Humans that can do well with less air, food, and water.
Poor people. We're getting better at being poor.
Resistant to skin cancer and many other environmental hazards that'll be.
So here's what's interesting. The pressures that are on us make this very hard to decide. Because if you want to say what is evolutionarily successful, a lot of people might be like, oh, well, really being really, really smart is being successful in our world because you could be like Bill Gates and you can make billions of dollars and that makes you a titan of industry, which is true.
Having a great ass, I would argue, does very well sexually.
And is actually much better than Bill Gates because, again, Bill Gates has, what, two kids? Like
that dumpy ass nerd.
Yeah. In terms of passing on your genes, he is essentially a infertile person from the 1800s. Because I think infertile people in the 1800s had like four kids. Like he is somebody who has not passed on a lot of genes, right? But who is successful? And this is the whole idea, like the joke idea behind
Melinda
the movie
Gates.
Idiocracy. Yeah, in the movie Idiocracy, right? Is like that a lot of times people who are having the most kids are the ones who are least prepared to have them and the least capable and et cetera, et cetera. And so technically, that is true, that more and more people who attain higher levels of education have less kids and then therefore spread those genes on less, and more people who have less levels of education tend to have more kids younger and therefore spread that as well. Now, there's some problems with that because even though intelligence is heritable, it doesn't mean that just because your mom is smart or your dad is smart or one is dumb or the other is dumb that you are going to be.
Yeah, you
heritability
be
and genes don't work that way.
Leaving the womb. Yeah, I think it can happen.
Well, not just that, but the way genes combine and recombine and stuff, stupid people have smart kids all the time. Like that stuff happens. That is totally normal. And so that doesn't really work that in that linear fashion, the way Idiocracy imagines it. Again, another kind of misinterpretation of evolution. So what you'd have to say is, what is a driving force? What is something that causes people to be successful and then have a bunch of kids who are also selected for in that same level of success? And one of the things I would argue is that other than things like resistance to certain types of pandemic diseases, it's really hard to have that in terms of anything that stretches over time periods because our lives are so different from the lives of our parents and even more so than our grandparents. And if you get to great grandparents
with our WAPs.
Yeah. Well, seriously, like think of whatever was like a positive attribute in the 1750s, you know, and other than disease, resistance to disease pandemics, it probably wouldn't apply today. They're like, we're really good at not dying from mercury poisoning and
going to church every Sunday.
It takes a while for those things to accumulate in a population and be selected for. And because our culture shifts so fast, it's really hard to think of consistent things that would work that way. Now, obviously, there's always things like health and being able to live past reproductive age. So if you are born with the usually genetic diseases that kill people before they can reproduce are selected against and that kind of stuff. But in reality, when you're thinking about the future of evolution of humanity, I think that the selection pressures that are on us will never be that consistent to produce too much more outside of general health, general well-being, resistance to certain diseases, you know, moderate amounts of intelligence that aren't inhibiting to you breeding. And the reality of the future of human evolution is that it will be guided in a much more direct fashion with gene editing and gene selection for embryos. And in that sense, the future of evolution is one where we are writing it as opposed to reading it. And we are, you know, let's say I go right now and my wife and I go and go try and get like in vitro fertilization or something.
This is a McDonald's, sir. Next.
Why do you have the stirrups then?
I just got to clean the bathroom. The stirrups.
If we went to an in vitro doctor, they would take a bunch of embryos from my wife. They would select the best ones. They'd take a bunch of sperm from me. They'd select the most motile ones. They'd combine them. And then they would look at the embryos, the combined embryos, that looked the best. And we got to select them, even down to gender. Now, that means that in the future, as that gets even better and better and better, you're going to be able to kind of select for certain genes. I want my son to be tall. I want my daughter to have blonde hair. Whatever it is, you'll be able to select for that, including things like intelligence and resistance to disease. And that, I think, will be a huge game changer. So in my mind, evolution is always going to happen. It is just the change of gene frequency over time. That'll happen through genetic drift. It'll happen through anything. But seeing where it's going is almost impossible now because of how much our lives change and are different from the generations above and below us until we get to the point where we can point that gun and shoot the bullet exactly where we want it. And once we get there, that is going to be a very fast, probably quite scary time to be in.
I suppose that's a better solution than mine. I was just going to use CRISPR technology to give anybody who's a genius a great ass. And I think...
Oh, that works too.
Raise their market value. Like if Bill Gates just had a thick butt, just a thick bubble butt.
I mean, I'm kind of wondering why you went that way and not the other way. Like, couldn't we use the same technology to make an already large-assed people smarter?
I believe that there should be rewards for people who've achieved great things in science. Listen,
Are you trying to claim that a great ass is not a great thing?
Listen, you know what? You're right. Let's flowers for Algernon some people.
Flowers for damn Jernon.
Damn, that's a shirt. That is a shirt. Damn Jernon.
Holy shit, Damien, we went so long we have like absolutely no time for the second article. We're just gonna have to skip that shit.
That's fair. We did it for you guys.
All right. Thank you, audience, for coming back for Science Faction 498, where you learned all about whether or not we're still evolving. And that's it, because we talked too goddamn long about everything else. I'm sorry again that we won't have an iCall BS this week, but we are coming back next week for our big episode 500. Make sure you keep tuning in to the weekly Corona podcast and the weekly Corona updates. I'm going to keep doing those until we're out of this whole pandemic thing, because I think this information is really, really important. And also, I tend to try and sanitize those a bit. There's not nearly as much dick jokes, as not much anything, so that if you feel like it, you can share those with your family and friends who might not be into our sweet-ass damn Jernon humor, I guess.
And if you like Science Faction, please go on iTunes or wherever you get your podcast, although iTunes does give preference, and leave us a 5-star review and a comment. Behind the scenes, we know our numbers. Like, Science Faction is a well-established podcast. Bobby's been working his butt off for many, many years now. And Awful Neutral, I started this podcast out of spite, purely for spite reasons, just true, to try to get a podcast that has higher numbers than Bobby. And while I have failed in that respect, Bob, Science Faction's numbers are higher. On Awful Neutral, we have more 5-star reviews and comments than Bobby does on Science Faction. And while I love this, this eats Bobby and chaps his ass to no end. Knowing full well, this show only works when Bobby has complete control. So I need everybody, even though this will hurt me and my personal argument with Bobby, to help the show and go on and give us a 5-star review and a comment on iTunes. It really helps out. Thank you very much. That was the most entertaining way I could present that.
Especially in our lead up to 500, this is going to be exciting. We're going to take a look back at all 500 episodes. Damien, you and I are going to talk a little bit about our all-time favorite episodes. We're going to share some with you, including one time we accidentally let a crazy guy in the studio and we didn't know it until about 20 minutes into the podcast.
And we're not talking about Alex Jones. We're talking about a legitimate dude.
And like, that was also back when I wasn't nearly as good at editing. That was a 25 and a half hour editing session to get the crazy out. I literally had to go to other episodes we had taped and edit in things of us talking to just kind of make it seem normal.
Huh. You are a wonderful guest. And you don't seem crazy at all. I'm glad I said that in the prior episode.
We'll talk about some of our previous hosts, some of our favorite times in studio, some of the craziest stuff that's happened, some of our live events, all of that stuff. Super excited about that. It's basically a look back at the last 500 episodes. Please let us know some of your favorite parts of science faction history. We love you guys so much. It is fantastic to see those numbers rise. It's fantastic to see the fan emails and those nice fan packages with all those shirts and whatnot that we get. We love you guys so much. Cannot wait to have you back here next week for Science Faction 500.
Happy 500th episode from Copernicus! Oh, wait. This isn't the 500th. I'm early. Oh, well. Back into the ghost portal. See you soon.
You've been listening to Science Fiction. Wait, that's not right.